Hello, everyone. This is Rick Earl with Lemmy, and welcome to the call. We have a guest lecturer today, Angela Creel. She created the Hero Project. She is also a Lemmy Leadership Trainer. I've been to her training, and it's excellent. It's a privilege to have her here today, Angela. Welcome to the call. And I'm going to turn the time over to you. From what I understand, this call is going to be on simulations.
Yeah.
And so a very good and yet deep topic that there should be some good discussion on and good questions. Then she may have you hold the questions till last. I'll let her deal with that and let's get started. And here's Angela. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Hey, Rick. Are we muted right now?
Yeah.
Okay, just double checking. All right. Well, welcome everybody. I was really excited to do this call. One of the reasons is because I get a lot of feedback about simulations. A lot of people in my group
muted.
A lot of people in my group have asked me about simulations and told me that they are uncomfortable with them, that they don't understand them. And other people, you know, doing Shakespeare, they have questions about them. I think Shakespeare teachers deal with them a little bit easier because our simulations are so different. I thought it would be a good time to do a conference call on simulations just to help people partly get more comfortable with them, to understand them more, and to be able to have the confidence to put them together. So I guess one of the things that is my goal today, I wanted to change your paradigm of how a lot of people think of simulations. And I realized that one of the reasons that I feel really comfortable with simulations is because a lot of the people in my family work with simulations. And we talk about them, I'm the only one in my family who homeschools. And my kids are old in my family. So they look at simulations for themselves and not necessarily in education. But in talking to different people about them, I realized it's the same. It's the same in real life simulations as it is in educational simulations. We have the similar goals, similar aspects of the simulations apply. And so I'd like you to think of simulations as not something foreign, but something that is used in all different career fields and all different people's lives. In fact, I'm quite confident that you have people in your life that have done or do simulations and haven't really thought about it, haven't really considered how close it is to you. So some of the people who do simulations, like if you have anybody who's in the military in your family or in your, you know, in your circle of friends, then those people, they do simulations quite often. And a lot of times they call them war games. And a lot of things that they learn from them are, for one thing, they practice military strategy. They practice using, you know, the tools of their trade, the weapons and the other tools, like, you know, the communications tools and even navigation, like compasses and stuff like that. So they practice doing a lot of the things in their trade, but they also practice being in a situation that if they were really in, would be dangerous and difficult But you can simulate the situation and let them practice what their trade is without putting them in a difficult situation. Some of the other people who use simulations are like sports people. They do a lot of simulation in management training. In business training, they do simulations. One of my good friends, Heidi Christensen, from Hemet, teaches some really wonderful scholar projects that are about personal finance and personal money management. And she does these amazing simulations to help kids understand all these different things like passive income and multiple streams of income. And in fact, she did one at my house, and I was supposed to take some pictures for her, and then I was going to leave and do some, you know, get some, in my mind, get some stuff done. And I ended up staying because I was learning so much. I had never had a class on any of that. And so watching the kids roll through this simulation that was all day, and it was super fun, that they learned so much. I learned probably more than the kids. I was really interested in it. But they do these business simulations not only for kids like that, but also Harvard Business School does simulations regularly in their classes. So upper education does it so that they can practice investing and doing things that take risk without actually putting anybody's money at risk, which I think is a really good way to do it. And they can feel like the rush and the fun of being financially successful in that, and they can also feel kind of a little bit of the pain and the loss when things go wrong without actually hurting somebody's, you know, portfolio. The law, they do a lot of simulations in to prepare for that. In the auto industry, in the space industry, anytime that as kids, if you were in public school, anytime that you did a fire drill, an earthquake drill, or even like now they do those bomb drills, those are all simulations. I'm a little worried. I just pushed a couple of buttons. I hope I didn't lose a bunch of people. Anyway, you know what? I'm just going to go on because I don't know what else to do about that. You know what? I'm going to unmute for just a minute and just check.
Yeah, you're fine, Angela. You didn't lose anybody.
Okay, cool. Are they still muted, or did I just unmute everybody?
They're muted. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So we all have people in our lives that do simulations, and probably you've done them and you didn't even realize, like the fire drill thing. And there's a lot of really good reasons why people do them besides just to practice. The military practices, the medical professions practice, but a couple of the reasons that, like one of the reasons Harvard does it is because it adds so much energy to their classes that they can't get any other way. And I know my first daughter, who's now, you know, grown and an adult and has a family, she did some simulations with George Wythe for a long time ago, George Wythe University, and she did a week's worth. Somebody from George Wythe came to our community and did a week's worth of simulations, and she went every day and did them. And one thing that I thought was neat is that they explained to the students or the scholars that a simulation, when you do a simulation, you learn so much more in a short period of time. So if you have a like in your classes, you have 2 hours. If you had a simulation that lasted the whole time, a 2-hour simulation, it's something that they can, it could be, if it went well and you debriefed well, it's something that they could talk about for weeks and even a long time afterwards that they would be thinking about and still learning from. So it's one of those things that stays with you. And I think that we've all felt that in training, when we've gone to training and then we come home, you know, probably sleep deprived, a little exhausted. We've gone through all of this simulation because that's how we do our trainings. It's one big simulation, and then you start thinking about it and you start understanding it slowly. As you're preparing for your class, all of this great understanding is coming to you after the simulation, and that's how simulations work. You put in kind of a short, intense amount of effort, and then over time, this great understanding comes to you as your brain and your heart is able to process what you've been through and done. Well, and of course, the debrief. And I'm going to keep talking about the debrief, how important it is. And in the end, we're going to talk about how and why and what the debrief is, but that's one of the real keys to making your simulation work well. So Harvard uses theirs to put a lot of energy in their class, and they also use it because it makes what you are trying to help the kids learn more memorable. So if you're trying to teach the kids something about leadership or about statesmanship, and you do it through a simulation, how much more are they going to remember the simulation than the lecture? So remember that when you have to choose, you know, you're short on time and you have to choose between your simulation and your lecture, the simulation makes it memorable. It helps connect your emotions to what you're learning, and that is how your brain stores memories. It connects it to emotions. And so that's another reason why to do the simulations is it makes it memorable. It helps them realize how to act around others. When you do the simulation, sometimes there's mistakes made. Sometimes people don't act that well around others, and sometimes they are, you know, too nice or whatever. All those things you learn in the simulations, and then as you debrief, you learn them times 10. So learning to work as a team and learning to work around others is a huge, huge benefit that you get from simulations, as well as how to think on your feet, another biggie, especially with the simulations that we do in the TGYC class, but also, you know, also the other classes. We, you know, they're practice scholar classes, but they are helping them learn how to think on their feet. And simulations, one, the last thing I'm going to talk about of why, and we'll, as we go through some of the stuff, there's other reasons why you should do them. But these are kind of the biggies. But the last is that it brings people together. And in Shakespeare, our big simulation is the play. And there's nothing that I know that brings people together like a play. It is, and part of that is it's because it's a simulation. But all simulations make a difference in how they bring people together. And I will touch on that again. So I hope that just gives you a beginning of why we do them. Number one, people, you know, when they leave our Commonwealth, that's not the last time they're going to do simulations, hopefully. Hopefully they're going to keep doing them for the rest of their lives in different areas. And there's a lot of good reasons to do them. So let me just tell you a little about what I'd like to do is just kind of talk about some talk about some simulations that they do, you know, in like in a career field, and then we'll and then use what they do to relate it to how we use ours. My brother is a he makes simulators for the military. Well, he's a computer programmer, so you know, or not a he's a computer scientist. I don't know what he is, but he works on these big simulators for the military. And most of the ones that he works on are flight simulators, so they are for pilots. And no matter what kind of flight simulator it is, if it's a military or if it's a, you know, civilian, they have to be certified through the FAA. Every single simulator has to be certified. They can't have one that isn't. So, and pilots always today, they always learn on a simulator. Before they go and do the real thing, they have to learn. They have to learn on a simulator. And it makes it nice because, you know, before there were simulators, people, if you blew it, you just crashed. And there was no preparing. You just, there was a little preparing. You can learn how it works, but a lot of it was just throw them in and hope they swim. And so his take on it was that they make these simulators so that they can have things happen that you don't really want to happen in real life, but it will prepare you in case they do. They never, when they use a simulator, they never simulate a nice flight. They always simulate something that's going to test the pilot, that's going to train the pilot to go through the right systems to, you know, to survive. And they always use the simulator to stress the pilot. Now, just stopping there for a minute, that's, we use simulations to challenge the scholars. Simulations, a lot of times simulations are really fun. Sometimes they're really serious, and occasionally they're super scary, like PGYC simulations can be a little bit nerve-wracking. But they're very challenging, and they really, they should never be boring. That's one rule about doing it. If a simulation is boring, nobody's learning anything. If they should be tested and they should be a little bit challenged. And of course, you know, these are kids, they're not pilots, so we don't want to really stress them out. But we do want them to really get into it and to put all of their effort into you know, doing the simulation. So with these simulators that my brother works on, they simulate military missions. They can even show, one of the things that they can do is they can have the pilots go through the mission before they go there. So they know where the mountains are, where the targets are, and they can actually walk through the mission ahead of time. Excuse me. And that's one of the things that we do our simulations for. We want to prepare our kids for life experiences. They're not going to be the exact same mission that our kids have, but they are going to hopefully prepare them for their mission. And so that's one of the things that we do it for, is to prepare them for their missions. In the military, they have specific goals. They have specific objectives. When we put ours together, we want to have goals and objectives. And I suggest that you write those down. When you're putting together a simulation, you write down the goals and objectives. That is a huge part of putting it together. When these military guys do their simulations, they are all connected. So the people who are actually in the simulations, They're each in a simulator, and one simulator is this tank, and one simulator is that tank, and one simulator is this plane. And so they're all connected in this kind of like this war game. Well, in our simulations, one of the big things that we do is we make sure we do these simulations as big groups. Well, not big groups, but groups. And what that does to help us is that these kids, they can rely on each other, and they learn that life is working as a team. Most of our lives, we are working with people. And most of you are in Commonwealth schools, and you know that you rely on your executive board, you rely on the other mentors, especially if you partnered up with a mentor. And most people, when they work in a career or even at home, they work with a team of people. So that's one thing they really get. And when you put your simulations together, you want to use that teamwork, because that's one of the things I always, as a mentor rep, I had tried to explain to my Commonwealth school, you know, other mentors, that we want to do the things in our Commonwealth school that involve interaction with the kids, because they can do a lot of work on their own at home. So anything that involves working with other people, it's a good thing to do at the Commonwealth school. So as you do your simulations, team up and use your teams, because that's where they're going to really get a lot of their how to work with people and leadership skills and that kind of stuff. Another thing is when my brother puts these simulators together, what they actually do is the person who puts the simulation together is they build the capabilities into the simulator. And so as you put your simulation together, you want to build capabilities in. So you're going to start with figuring out your goals. What do you want them? And this goes back to one of the things that Tiffany says all the time is what do you want them to think, feel, and do? And that'll be your easiest thing. What do you want them to think, feel, and do? And so I hope everybody has a pencil and paper, because I'm gonna have you do a couple of things, and then I'm going to unmute you. And or maybe I will have you unmute yourselves, and one at a time we'll have a few people share. But the first thing I want you to do is think of your class, and what do you want them, in doing a simulation for them, what do you want them to think, feel, and do? So as if you were putting this together a simulation today, I want you to write that down. So my class is this, and I want them to think this, I want them to feel this, and I want them to do this. I'll give you a minute. Okay, as you guys are, I'm hoping that you guys could write some stuff down there. One thing that you do not want to do, you want to know what you want them to think, feel, and do, but you've got to realize that you can't require an exact outcome. What you're going to do is give them some challenges and some tests, and they get to choose how to respond. And that's why it works so well, because they have the freedom to choose their own course of action. And so as we want to, you know, we want to have a goal and we want to have an aim, but we do not want to have to dictate exactly the outcome. The next thing is, as you prepare it, you want to remember you need to keep it safe. And that means you need to keep it safe physically and emotionally. And I know that in Shakespeare, we have rules. We start our class with safe place rules. And we have to, because it's embarrassing to act in front of people for most people. Some people it's not. We all know, you know, that some people love it and they can't wait to be the center stage and whatever. But most people are a little bit hesitant and they need safe place rules so that they can feel safe. And what that means is rules that the kids come up with themselves so that they'll feel safe. Well, that's not, we don't do that in all the different scholar projects, but we still need to provide a safe place. And I think most of us know this already, because if you have a safe place, your book discussions go better, your everything that you do in your class, that you want class participation, goes better, because they don't feel like they need to be guarded or protective, or, you know, keep themselves afraid of the other people. So you know your class by now. It's November. You know most of the kids, and you can gauge what safe means. But you need to make sure that as you go through the simulation, they feel like they are comfortable acting in the simulation, and that they are also comfortable in the debrief. So I'm just going to say that. Keep it safe physically and emotionally. Also, if you're asking them to do something that's very uncomfortable, they should have an out, because they should. We don't want to make somebody feel so uncomfortable without an out. That's not appropriate. So make sure it's safe physically and emotionally. One thing that I like to do is when I'm getting together a simulation is talk to other people a little bit about it. And so if I have a mentor that I'm mentoring with, we can sit and we can throw ideas together. If you have more than one mentor that you're mentoring with, that's even better. Use the synergy of the group to have some really good ideas to put a simulation together. Another thing is to take time to ponder it and to pray over it or meditate about it and open yourself up to inspiration. So when I do a simulation, I think we need a simulation for this, and I give myself a few days. And during those few days, I make sure I have quiet time. I pray and ask for inspiration, and I open myself up for inspiration. So I'm not listening to loud music all the time and got myself scheduled every moment, and that I make sure I have some quiet times just ruminate on it. So that's kind of like your prep. Talk to other people, get a group together for synergy, pray, ponder, meditate, and open yourself up to the inspiration. Now, when it comes down to really putting it together, we'll go back to the teams. You want to figure out if you're going to have teams, or if you're going to have roles and assign people roles. And that's one of the things that's really good to do is assign roles. And you can, sometimes I'll put a simulation together and I will type up just one sentence in somewhere between one sentence and a paragraph on each person's role. And then I have them either pick out of a hat or I give the roles out, and they have roles that they have to play given a situation. They have people that they have to be. You know, they might be a farmer, or they might be a military strategist, or they might be a holistic healer, or whatever. They have specific roles to play. It might be a sheriff. One thing that I do is I look to real life. So a few years ago, I went to a crime summit in my area, and it was kind of like a town hall meeting, only it was not exactly a town hall meeting, but it was a big meeting, and they had the county commissioner and the mayor and the sheriff and the police chief, and they had the district attorney and all these different people that had a part of crime, that played a part in solving crime. And they all spoke, but what was interesting to me is that it was apparent that they had gotten together on a number of occasions before that to brainstorm ways of taking the crime, you know, down. In my area, I lived in an area that had a lot of crime. And so I went home and I thought about that. And, you know, later on in the year, an opportunity came up to do a simulation. And when I put down my goals, I realized that if I worked out a crime summit simulation and gave them those roles, that would actually meet the goals that I had for the kids. The goals I had for the kids didn't have anything to do with crime, but they did have to do with understanding the roles of government in a local community. And also having some leadership roles and working with people. So my goals were met by looking at a real-life experience. So that's something that I would consider, is thinking about real-life experiences and, you know, put them away in your brain thinking, this could make a simulation sometime. The trick is to make sure it meets your goals. So what I want you to do now is I want you to take a minute and make a list of, now, a simulation doesn't have to come from real life experiences. As some of you know, some of you teach classes that are set in a historical time period, and you do a lot of that from that time period. Those are taken from real life. But Shakespeare, and to be honest, I've never taught pyramids, so I don't know if theirs are real life, or I don't know what theirs are. But in Shakespeare, you know, all those warm-ups that we do and all the play, those are our simulations. So it doesn't have to be real life. It can just be a situation that you set up to make it, to make a learning experience happen. In fact, maybe I will tell you one simulation that is a fun one that has nothing to do with real life, but that turns out to be really good. My daughter did this at like a church thing, and I looked at it and thought, wow, this is a simulation, and they're doing it at church. And I know nobody at church thought, let's do a simulation, write down our goals. But they did obviously have some goals, and they put together this silly thing that the kids did, and it was really awesome. And so actually I've seen other people do it in Commonwealth since. But they had two teams, and they each had a skateboard. And they had two points, point A and point B, that they had to go between. And on either side of the two skateboards were a bunch of people from opposing teams. And those people had these sponges and these spongy balls. and they were supposed to hit the people on the skateboards. So one at a time, a kid would sit on the skateboard, and in their mouth they would have a spoon, and they would fill the spoon up with M&Ms from a bowl at the start. And they would have to, push themselves along on the skateboard and get to the other side and put the M&Ms in a bowl on the other side. And, you know, the members of the team would continue to do this until they had moved all the M&Ms from one bowl on one side to the other side. But as they were trying to take them in a spoon in their mouths and sit on the skateboard and scoot themselves along, the people on the sides were throwing balls at them. And they weren't balls to hurt them, but they were trying to knock the M&Ms out of their mouth. And so I got to tell you, all it is a lot of giggling and fun, and it was just hilarious to watch it because it was, you know, one of those big games. But in the end, we sat down and talked about it, talked about how in life we have some hard challenges, like taking M&Ms from one bowl to another, and how people are throwing balls at us. And a lot of times there's all these obstacles, and it's hard to dodge the things that are trying to keep us from fulfilling our mission. And the leaders of this activity did not tell the kids what their goals were. But the kids, they had to comment on it. And what do you think this is like? And what do you think that is like? And so the kids actually could see, the kids actually came up with what it meant to them. And that's what I just said, all came from the kids. So that's an example of a simulation that is not based on real life. It's a situation set up that the kids go through that afterwards they learn from through a debrief and thinking about it. And, you know, they're probably learning while they're doing it too. But so I'm going to give you a minute to write down just a couple of ideas, and they don't even have to be related. Think of some ideas that you could do for your, sorry, I still have that asthma problem from last week, from last month. But write down some ideas, both real life and game-like, that you could have them do. Now, you don't have to plan out the simulation. Just throw out some ideas on your paper of possibilities that might meet your goals. So I'm going to give you, you know, like a minute to do that. Rick, are you still on the call?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I just wanted to see if you have anything that you want. I know I'm like throwing out a lot of stuff, and I'm going to have questions at the end. But if you have anything that you wanted, you're welcome to, you know.
Oh, I think it's great. I know that when I've done simulations, you know, each time it's had a pretty good effect on the kids. I know there's been a couple of times when it's been very emotional for some of the kids, you know, doing, writing the Constitution or different things when you're staging revolts and all these kinds of things that are, I don't know, they have to do with our freedoms and everything. And they get in these big groups of kids all in a Continental Congress or whatever, and some of them at the end can be rather stressed that it didn't turn out the way they wanted it. And I know that there could be that, or they could have different things in their life that can make it difficult for them in the simulation. And so there are times that we have to be careful with our simulations that we don't take them too far.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
But it does create a very safe place if, as long as we don't take it too far or to an extreme, then it creates a safe place for them to be able to of that learning atmosphere. And enough, what do you call it? I mean, there's so much opportunity for each person to input. Some of them learn that they thought they would be able, if they could just get up and tell people what they think, they could influence this group of people to do something. And that gives them a chance to get up and try to do that, try to persuade people, this is the best choice, this and that. And when people don't see it the same way they do, it opens a whole new vision to them. Even though they explained it to them, these other people still have their own opinion. They still have their views. And, you know, it opens up a whole new world to them, saying, wow, there are other views than just my family's view and just something. I thought that if they had this explained to me, you know, I took 5 minutes and explained to them all this stuff on why this should be, and 85% of them still disagree with me when we vote. You know.
Yeah, that's a great experience to have, really. I mean, I think every kid should have that experience, just because it really shows you what it was like in the Continental Congress or the Constitutional Convention, both of those situations. Because a lot of those guys, nobody agreed. And you think, now we look at it and think, they all got together and wrote this great thing, but, you know, it was more like what you're describing. I'm telling them what I think is the best thing, and nobody agrees with me. They're still voting another way. But thank you. That's awesome. Okay, I hope everybody just got to write a couple of ideas down. And if you didn't, that's okay. It takes longer than a couple of minutes. But what I want you to do is, like, start. Like, put something down. And like I said, it takes me days to go through, you know. Unless I just, you know, have a brainstorm and think, oh, we've got to do this in TJYC, or, oh, we've got to do this in Shakespeare, you know, and then I know it's probably inspiration because I don't think that way. But I want you to begin it and to put stuff down. You want to make it fun. You want to make it, sometimes it is very serious. What Rick is describing is, sometimes these are really serious and people get very, very involved. In fact, it's really easy to get overly involved in a simulation for certain people. Not everybody, especially kids, feels that way. But some people are able to completely let go and get involved in the situation over the top. And I have this funny story. Well, this is a very funny story in the simulation world. I don't know if I thought it was funny, but I hope it'll be funny to you. There was a commander, and he was in one of these big military simulations. And it's kind of like Ender's Game, where everybody's simulator is connected. So they're all playing this virtual war game. And like, they'll have a little simulator, which is like this little pod with a guy sitting in a chair with all his controls for a tank. And there's another one next to it and another one next to it, and they're all in the same war. Well, this commander was in a tank, and he was going, you know, doing this mission, and his simulator broke. The computer software crashed or something, and he stuck his head out and said, this is, you know, my tank is broken. And they said, oh, well, hop out of that tank, that simulator, and just step to the one next to you, doesn't have anybody in it, and you can keep going in the simulation in a different tank. So he hopped into the next simulator, and which put him in a different tank in the simulation. And so he's going, and after a few minutes, they fixed his original simulator, and they put their head into his, you know, the new simulator, the new tank that he was in, new virtual tank, and said, your simulator is better. You can go back to it now. We fixed it. And he said, okay. And he was so into the simulation that he had to drive his pretend tank, his virtual tank, in the, you know, in like the war game, he had to drive it back to the other, where the other tank was sitting, before he got out of his simulator and took two steps into the next one. So he was so into it, he felt like he really had to drive this pretend tank back. which I think is really funny. But some people get so involved in the simulation that that's what it is. They're it's real to them. So what you want to do is you want to make sure and keep it so that people do not so that people don't get so involved that it become that they become emotionally. They put all their emotions toward it because you don't want anybody melting down in the end of it. And so and it's easy to do that. When my brother puts these tanks, when he not tanks, but when he puts these simulators together, what they do is they're all networked together. So there's the builder puts in the capability. So when you put together your simulation, you put in all these capabilities. You give. If you have a president or a, you know, king or a leader, you give them certain powers. You give other people certain powers. And, you know, you let them have specific capabilities. And you also give some limits. You're not allowed to do this and you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to have everybody killed. You're not allowed to blow up the alien planet or whatever it is. And then you, as the you know person who's in charge of the simulation, you manipulate the aspects of the simulation and you have controls. So just like the person who's working with the pilots, they will throw in all kinds of obstacles for them to overcome. And so you, as somebody who's working with the kids, you get to choose what obstacles to throw into the simulation. And you can, you don't have to put them all out there on the table at the beginning of the simulation. You can start the simulation, and as things progress, you can throw in obstacles as you go. It's kind of like, I'm just using this example because I thought it was easy to see, and if you didn't see the movie or read the book, it's no big deal. But The Hunger Games is a book where they have this awful game. It's like a simulation, but they have these people who control it, and they can change the weather, and they can change, you know, they can add insects, or they can add animals, and it changes things. It throws in some challenges, and that's kind of like who you are. But by doing that, it's your responsibility to make sure that it stays a safe place so that they're learning and they're challenged, that they're not in a position where they're overly stressed. Okay, if you would like to share, if you had an idea for a simulation that you want to share, I'm just going to take a couple of minutes for that, and then we're going to talk about debriefs. So let's see, to unmute, I think you press star 6, and if you would like to, go ahead and unmute, and maybe we'll do 3 or 4. And then we'll, and then because I want to have time for my debrief to talk about
all those people, those ones with the who get emotionally into it. It's really that debrief is really important that they get to hear that they don't leave and go home or something because they're so emotionally upset. You can say, okay, the way you feel right now, what do you think the Founding Fathers felt when they were discussing something and the people didn't get they didn't understand or get it? You know, you can actually relate that to them in your debrief. And it's important for those, especially those students who might get too emotionally into it, that you talk about it and let them understand and see things from a learning point of view, that they don't go away just thinking, oh, that was dumb. I got really into it and I should have. Because they've got something to learn about human life, about how people feel about everything right there.
Absolutely. And it's also important to realize that sometimes you don't know who's emotionally involved. Some people it's obvious because they're yelling or they're jumping in and, you know, doing stuff that makes it really obvious that they're really emotionally involved. But other people can be quiet and sitting there, and maybe they're really stewing over it, or maybe they're, you know, really upset that somebody else, you know, took over and did stuff they don't like. So I would suggest that Rick is absolutely right, but make sure that everybody knows that they really need to be part of the debrief. And so you as a mentor probably have to make sure that you leave time enough for the debrief. You stop the simulation early enough so that you have time to really debrief it, because the debrief...
That can be hard, because these simulations are so fun. You get into it and you have, see the kids having so much fun. Some of them are just, you know, just really into it and having fun, having a blast, taking, you know, some people are controlling where it goes and other ones are following and everything, but you really have to take that time at the end to debrief, set it aside. That's right.
It's true. And after you have one really good debrief, I think that helps you know that you have to take the time, because then you realize it's really awesome when you debrief. Maybe we'll just talk about debriefs, because I think we probably have to unmute people to have them be able to talk. So maybe we'll just talk about debriefs and then we'll let people share and then ask questions. You think that's a good idea? I think we'll do that, just because I'm wondering about the time and stuff, but I want to be able to let people have time. But we're kind of talking about debriefs right now. My sister works at a hospital, and she's worked at several really large hospitals before this one, but she works at Kaiser now, and they do simulations where the other ones did not. And they have these dolls that are like human size that they can actually put an IV in. They open their eyes, they have a pulse. They actually react like a real person. They're real expensive, like robot people. And so they get people together and they do these big simulations. They'll have a whole team, and you pick up a card and you have a role to play on the team, just like the simulation I was talking about earlier. And they go through these really intense simulations to make sure, you know, that the simulated person doesn't die, and that they get treated, and that they find out what's wrong, and that they make them well. And she said she had never done a simulation until she worked for this company. And I thought, that is weird that nobody else does them, but it's expensive to have these weird bodies. But now she did a whole bunch when she was training to open up the hospital. But now they still do them 3 times a year. And she told me that their people are so much better off because of the simulations. The training is really intense, but the people are prepared. She calls it running a code. So if you have to run the code, if you've had simulations, your ability to work with a group is so much better. And the ability to work with a group, for everybody in the group, can mean if that patient lives or dies. It's that important. She also said that one of the things that they have to do in their simulation, if they don't ask questions, they don't know what's going on. So if they don't ask for a test, or they don't ask, what's the blood pressure, or does the person have diabetes, or what medications are all of... There's probably a lot more detailed things they can ask that I have no idea what they are, because I don't know anything about medicine. But if they don't ask, then they don't get the answer. So they have to ask the right questions in the simulation, which I thought was so cool. After I talked to her, I thought, I got to build that into my simulations, that the simulation people have to ask the right questions. But the really... good thing about what they do is the debrief. And they debrief these simulations, and I asked her, how do you feel comfortable debriefing that? You know, I mean, if the patient died and the real questions that they asked, which sound really familiar to us and Lemmy, are what went well and what would you need to change? And she said that the reason that they feel comfortable in the debrief talking about what they needed to change when the simulator died or whatever is because if the simulator dies, it's not one person's fault. The team was in charge. If they forgot to take the blood pressure, four people did it, failed, but not just one, you know what I mean, or 10 or whatever, how many people. So that is something to remember in the debrief, is that you have to look at it as a group when you're debriefing. It's what could we have changed, and what could have made it different, and try to keep it as a team, because when you are working as a team, you have a responsibility as a team. And that made me really think about debriefs, you know, and looking at some of the ones that went really well. That makes a lot of sense, that it's really about a group of people, and we help each other, and we're all part of it. What they really get out of the debrief is they change the way they do medical things. And they look at what could have gone better. And they change policies through debriefs of these simulations. But they also learn how to deal with things in an emotional way. When a simulator dies, it's, of course, way better than practicing on a real person who really died. But it still can be emotional, especially if it's a pediatric simulator. If it's a little, you know, child sim and you failed to find the problem and things went wrong, then your debrief helps you work through the emotional things of that. And she told me that they can be very emotional, because she told me that a nurse who is old enough to smoke at the nurse's station. So, I mean, she's been a nurse for a long time. She has smoked at the nurse's station. I don't think they ever did that in my lifetime. So, but she said that there was a mistake made on a pediatric simulator, and this woman was very emotional because she knew it could really have happened in real life. But the reason they do it on the simulator is so that they learn without killing anybody. But it was very emotional, and so through the debrief, they were able to talk about it. She was able to work through her emotions, because it's a very real part of the simulation. Of course, we're not doing life or death in our simulations usually, and hopefully we don't get that level of emotion, but we will get emotion. So you need a safe place, and I suggest you know your kids. If you have an issue in your class, with people who are very insensitive, then you might want to put safe place rules in. It's not a bad idea to have some rules and to instruct them on how to debrief sensitively with other people. That's absolutely appropriate. You're the mentor, so mentor them in how to do that. So make sure you have a safe place. Number two, make sure everybody has an open mind. So what you want to do is instruct them that as you debrief, to look for ways that they can improve and to open their mind and say, this is a learning thing. So as you open your mind to what you could do better, that helps you be better. If you're too defensive, you don't learn as much. So go into it with an open mind. And as a mentor, you need to look for what they do well and point it out. And if you took Shakespeare training, I'm sorry, this is the 500th time you've heard me say that. But I just think that is one of the top, characteristics of a good mentor, is to see what's going well and point it out and praise them for what's going well. Because if you do that, it's going to happen again and again. So look for what they did well and point it out. And you want in the debrief, one of your goals should be to build each other up, to help each other build each other up. Use the Socratic method and ask a lot of questions. And if you hopefully you've been involved in the simulation, you've been watching, you notice what's going on. So you can ask individual questions as you're going through the debrief. You know, you can say, so James, do you think that was a good decision that you made to declare war on, you know, whatever? And he can tell you, no, that turned out to be bad, and what I think would have been better is blah, blah, blah. So you can ask individuals, and, you know, does that mean you correct them if they say, I did a great job? No, you just let them, you know. But it gives them an opportunity to self-evaluate, which is a big part of a debrief, is self-evaluating. You teach them to look to themselves first, so evaluate themselves first. You don't want them all going into a debrief ready to point fingers at everybody else for why things failed. It's totally okay for things to fail. Going back to that patient who died, no real person died. Going back to the plane that crashed, everybody crashes the plane in the simulator because they give you a problem after problem after problem until the plane crashes. It's part of learning. So it's okay if things didn't work out perfectly in the simulation, and you want to bring that out in the debrief. That's the purpose of the debrief. That's the purpose of the simulation, to go through these challenging things and then talk about it and learn from it. So have them look to themselves first, and then have them look as a group. What could the group have done better? What about the group? And so you're not individually criticizing individuals. That's what you want to avoid. And if you think that there might, probably if you have somebody in your group who's going to do that, you probably know now. You don't have to wait till it happens to figure it out. And if you do, you give them instructions ahead of time to keep that from happening. Because a critique is not criticizing individuals. That's not what it's about. So have them look to themselves first and look to the group second. And they can never invite them to openly criticize or critique others. Remind them that they learn from critiques, and as they learn to take and give critiques and suggestions, that's where they're really learning. They don't even have to say it all the time. If they're looking for it and they're listening to the debrief, it's going in there. So it's really about learning from their experience and what they're seeing others do. And as a mentor, you need to be prepared and you need to let people open up emotionally. For some people, that can be really difficult, to let people be emotional in a debrief. But it's important that you let them be emotional in a debrief, and that you validate their emotions, and that you appreciate them. And when somebody opens up and they can make a connection with their own life and what's gone on in the simulation, then you thank them and you say, thank you so much for sharing that. Because what's really happening is other people are making the same connections, or they're making different connections. But everybody's growing from that experience. And even if you're not very comfortable with emotional debriefs, it's part of the deal. And as you do it, you'll get better at it, and you'll get more comfortable with it. But you have to let that happen. And that's just, it actually is a very good thing, I think. When people share during the debrief, it brings people closer together. And one thing that's really awesome to see is the kids leaving together and, you know, putting their arms around each other and talking about it because somebody opened up. That is a beautiful thing. So appreciate them. Say thank you for sharing, and let it happen. And the last thing about debriefs is the debrief is the most effective part of the simulation. So don't even do the simulation if you don't do the debriefs. And the last thing about doing the debriefs is to use your say go be do's. Listen and invite some kind of inspiration in, and try to really feel with your heart where you should be going, because it's a very powerful tool if you do it that way. A very powerful tool. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody. And then if you can mute yourselves again, to mute yourself,
actually, four star if you want to unmute, if they want to just unmute if when they want to speak.
Can they unmute if we've muted them as the host?
I believe so. We can have someone try it. See, Kathy Laura's out there. You want
Kathy, will you try it?
Four star.
If Kathy stayed on, she didn't have to go to somebody's soccer game.
No, she's there.
Oh, because you're on the computer.
Yeah. Maybe I got the wrong.
I think we have to unmute them and
okay.
Then have them mute themselves.
Push,
so to mute yourself.
To mute yourself, yeah.
Okay. So to mute them, to unmute them, is it five star?
No, five star is the recording. So to mute themselves is either to mute or unmute is four star. I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody.
Muted.
Okay, so to mute yourself would be four star. Push four and star, and it'll mute you. The other way we can do it is for people to raise their hands. If you have a question, you can raise your hand if I remember how to do it. Oh, five star raises
five star.
Your hand. So we can mute everybody. There we go. We'll mute everybody, and then whoever
conference
has a question.
Muted.
Okay, Kathy Moore shows she's got a question or wants to speak.
Hey, Angela, it's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
I actually did raise my hand to try to tell you that I couldn't unmute myself. We tried. It would just say line muted. But I do have a comment about debriefs that I think is, you know, useful to help move them along into, you know, out of just, you know, reporting into transformation. And that is that a lot of times, you know, you ask a question, and of course everybody knows, I'm sure, that you're supposed to ask open-ended questions. But you ask a question, you get kind of the duh response, you know. Well, you know, so how was that for you? And then somebody raises their hand, and you're just grateful somebody's, you know, that somebody's speaking up. And they say, wow, it was really hard. Okay, so it's like they've stated the obvious. And one thing you can do when that happens is then ask the follow-up question or questions that will take them to their epiphany. I mean, obviously it's different with each scenario what those questions might be, but, you know, you can thank them for responding, but then you can also say, you know, well, why was it hard? Or, you know, do you think it was harder for you than for everybody else? You know, whatever you feel like is the question that's going to get them to dig a little deeper, because then you help them go from just sort of like a superficial level of understanding to a deeper level, and that's where the transformation happens.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. Thank you, Kathy.
You bet.
So what do Rick? What do they? How did Kathy raise her hand? What did they push?
Okay, so five star will raise your hand.
So if you want to, I appreciate Kathy's comments. Kathy does great simulations, and she's a pro at it. But you're welcome to share. Like if you had some ideas for your goals or your when you brainstormed your ideas for your simulation, you're welcome to raise your hand and share them with us, or by pushing five star, or if you would like to ask a question, or if you have a comment, we welcome any of that. So just go ahead and five star, and Rick will unmute you. Because he sees your phone number and that your hand is raised. And he knows, and you'll know that you're unmuted because it'll say unmuted or something like that. You are now unmuted, something like that.
You're pretty good at that. I thought I was unmuted.
You are unmuted. Well, you know, you hear it so many times.
We have Jody, and then at least
awesome.
Jody, I'm going to unmute you. Just a second. Okay.
I just had a question about the classical acting simulations, our warm-ups and improv games. It seems like the kids have been doing them so long from Shakespeare on that they kind of just have the standard debrief answers all the time. It just seems to always have the same application.
Okay, I would suggest that, number one, you look for new ones that are really different. I would also, if I were you, I would welcome some longer ones, some little bit more involved ones, and I would make sure you change up your questions a lot. You know, ask some maybe some more personal questions, some self-evaluating questions, like, okay, I'm going to ask a question, and we'll go around, and if you want to pass, you get one pass, but I would like to know how you personally blah, 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 blah. And so they have, because in classical acting, they've been together for several years. It's not just like a new, brand new Shakespeare class. So you could ask them personal questions that give them a real chance to have a self-evaluation.
Okay, thank you.
Is that helpful, Jody?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think we've really done that keying in on individuals and It seems like it's often, you know, their answers have to do with acting, which I know that's part of it, but then, you know, how to transfer that into life.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because that is something that is a real key, is when you are debriefing any simulation, whether it's a real-life situation, you know, historical, or if it's like an acting game, you can ask them how it relates to them personally, and you can ask them how it relates to real life. And those are my favorite questions, because even though they're pat questions, I ask those questions every time. So it's not like they're brand new questions, which is always good to have new questions, but I like those because it really doesn't matter to me how good of an actor they are in the end. As they move on to college and to marriage and to, you know, their missions, I don't care about their acting skills, unless that's their mission. So really the questions about real life, that's what is helping them become statesmen and women, and that's what's helping them understand other people and some of those more important life skills or life, you know, not skills, but, you know, it helps them develop vision, and it helps them develop understanding of others and stuff.
Would it be good to even ask, how does this relate to your, I don't know if they all know their mission, but even, I mean, they wrote vision statements at the beginning of the year, so we could ask how it relates to their vision for this
sure.
year with that.
Yeah, but give them an opportunity to pass. Because sometimes that's too big of a question for that time period, you know? But it's
okay.
Still a good question to ask, because somebody is going to have an answer for it. And if you don't have an answer, they're still going to go home thinking about that question. They might have an answer for it the next week, and they might tell their friend or their mom, you know? You know, they asked me about this, and I didn't even know what to say, but you know what I think? And so I still think it's good to ask the question. So thanks, Jody. That was awesome.
Okay, then we go to, I think it's Alicia.
Hi, this is Alicia.
Hi, Alicia. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I was just looking for ideas. I'm mentoring Key of Liberty this year, and we have several lectures coming up on different battles of the revolution, and I just thought it would be really cool to have a simulation that involved a battle in some way, whether it was with army men or real people, and I just wondered if there were some ideas out there that would get them thinking about who they are as well as not just reenacting a battle.
That is a really good question. That is a really good question. So maybe
we should
open
it
up.
It'd be amazing if I could just write one, but I haven't done that before, so ideas are helpful.
Okay, well, thank you. And you know what? Well, if anybody has those, we invite you to share. And I also, you know what, Alicia, I want you to think about it, too. I think that when this is it, one of my goals for this was to change your paradigms about simulations so that you felt when you went home like they weren't so foreign. Like if you just opened yourself up, you could think of some really good ones. So not that you shouldn't borrow from other people because, oh, I do that all the time. I think some people have the greatest ideas for simulations. I love to hear their ideas. So if you guys have ideas you want to share with Alicia, but also remember that you should be able to go home. I guess this is it. I would like you to go home knowing that it's definitely within your power to write one. I don't think there's anybody that comes to training that can't if they try. I think too many people say, they use kind of like a negative self-talk thing, and they say, I don't understand it, I can't do it, I just don't know what to do, I'm afraid, you know, and they just talk themselves out of doing it. But if you open yourself up.
My biggest fear is doing one that will be ineffective, but I guess that's just another form of failure that we get to learn from.
Well, okay, you're afraid you're going to
do it. I want to know it's going to be effective.
Okay, well, there's two things.
So if
you can't,
done it and
you
it was
can't,
effective, then it's great to use that.
You can't assume, you can't know what the outcome's going to be when you put together a simulation. So even if you use somebody else's, they don't know what the outcome's going to be, ever.
That's true.
And Tatiana, who's really good at simulations and who grew up doing them, and that's, you know, she, I know she's done some that were bad. But what she says, and I think this is so wise, she's such a wise person, is that if you do the debrief well, it doesn't matter. You know, the simulation really isn't the important part. The simulation gives you something to debrief, and it's the talking about what went wrong that makes that a really important thing.
Okay.
And so plus, it is one of those things that the more you do, the more practice you get, the better you get at. So that doesn't mean your first one's going to be bad. It just means your third one's going to be awesome. So you get past the first two, right?
Okay.
Okay, awesome.
I will do it.
Thank you, Alicia. And if anybody had one that they want to share with Alicia, she would love to hear it.
Definitely.
So would we. Awesome. Thanks, Alicia.
Thanks.
Okay, now we're going to Nicole. And I don't think hers was a response. She had her hand up before.
Okay.
Hi, this is Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
I find that I don't have any problem coming up with the initial idea, like what I want the point to be, but it's finding a way to make an activity out of that that is my biggest challenge. Are there any steps that you take when you're thinking about changing it from an idea to an activity that you could share and help us out with?
Well, I think Well, I kind of gave my, I think I have three or four things that I do. I just, and I talked about them before, but maybe Rick, I'm going to reveal them and then maybe Rick has something, but I always look to real life first because sometimes it's easy for me to see situations, especially like in the news, and you can change it. It doesn't have to be exactly what's going, in fact, I suggest you change it. It doesn't have to be exactly what's going on in the news. But a lot of times, just current events and things that are happening help me figure out something. So I look to real life first. And then I also look to how to create the challenges that I'm looking for. Like, well, like that skateboard one with the balls. Somebody had a great idea to throw those balls at the kids because scooting on the skateboards with the M&Ms is hard, but the balls bring an element that makes look to real life and also look to what are the challenges you have to add and what can I use to add those challenges, you know? What situation can I create to add the challenges? Like those gamekeepers in the Hunger Games, you know? What am I going to add to make it difficult? And then talk to other people. I like to talk to other people because if I can come up with a couple of soft initial ideas and I talk to other people, they can get me to the point where I can get it done. Does that make sense?
Yes.
They give me a few pieces of input, some of which I take, some of which I leave. And, you know, between the two or three of us, it gets rolling and then I can put it together. So those, I really think, synergy makes a huge difference in our classes, especially between co-mentors. And so that would be a suggestion, especially if they don't think they know anything and they don't think they have anything to lose. They're just throwing out ideas. A lot of times they throw something out and you could totally see it. You just totally get a vision of what that's going to be. And so, Rick, did you have anything?
Not really. I like that, though, that it is open. I mean, you can always change your simulation. If it starts to get boring, if the kids, you're losing their attention, you can always shake it up and say, okay, now this happened. But you'll actually,
that's awesome. I think that's...
That's the other half of the maybe it's a good point. This just happened. Note from your
So I think that's important to remember that you can throw something in. If it is getting boring, you know that it's not going well. You have to throw something in. And that's something good to remember. That if you can get it started, and then as things come, you think, okay, this isn't, we need something else, and you create a coup, or you create, you know, you create an attack, or you create an economic, you know, crash or something to change it up a little. Or make
Wait,
the balls, or
so
dip the balls in water before you throw them.
Oh, my goodness.
So did that help you at all, Nicole? Is that...
It does, and as you reviewed that, I thought, oh, yeah, I heard that. I just didn't, like, mush them together in one tight spot, and that is what is helpful to me. So thank you for reviewing that for me. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, you're welcome. And like I said, if you're really stumped, go to your friends or your mom or your sister or your husband. My husband has given me some really good ones, and he's a pipe fitter. He's not somebody who does a lot of simulations, but sometimes he'll just throw out some ideas, and I think, that's it, you know. So go to somebody who can help you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, that's all the questions. Oh, I'm going to throw out there just one of the things that, of course, I was in, you know, teaching government and TJYC type of thing. But for students who are in some kind of situation like that, I always like to do a simulation where they get in a plane crash. They have to come up with their own government. All of a sudden, they say, there's a government.
Rick, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Is that better?
Maybe better.
I wasn't speaking. Okay. Yeah, when I was teaching more of a government type of class, Key of Liberty or TJYC, then when you're teaching the principles of government and why they need it, you actually put them in a simulation where there is no government. And you say, things start to happen. Somebody wants something. They took somebody's chicken or whatever it is. All of a sudden you need the law. There isn't a law. What are you guys going to do? And they start to understand why they need laws or why they need different things. And maybe abusive law, because if you appoint the wrong person as a leader, what can happen? There's a lot out there that can start just really small, and it can just grow. But then always remember to leave time for that debrief at the end.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you, Rick. You know what? I want to say one thing as we end. The most important thing in your safe place is that the kids in your group know that their mentor loves them and is there for them. So they feel comfortable doing it. They feel comfortable debriefing it. And they feel comfortable coming to you afterwards to talk about it if there's something important that they need to say or hear. So just remember to validate them and love them. And I always tell people that is what you can fix a lot of mistakes and a lot of failures by loving the kids. You can blow it in a lot of areas, but if you love the kids and if you're there for them, then that makes up for a lot of faults, a lot of other failures. So anyway, I hope you guys have a great month, and I hope you guys pull together some great simulations, and please feel free to post them on the loop if you want to share.
Thank you so much for being here, Angela, and for teaching us today. And it's been wonderful, very informative, very helpful, and we appreciate that you're here to help us.
Okay, well, thanks. Everybody have a great weekend.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.